community radio station. Don't give up the fight. Never giving up the fight, even on a hot Thursday morning. It's about an hour away from kicking off Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Then at 10:15 on Flashpoints, we'll take a closer look at the Kurds in Syria with New York Times Magazine author Robert F. Worth. Coverage of Yemen and the role of the U.S. in a deadly air campaign led by the Saudis. And the Election Crimes Bulletin with Dennis Bernstein and Greg Palast. Also today at 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones interviews Zora O'Neill, author of the new book All Strangers Are Kin, Adventures in Arabic and the Arab World. And at 11:30, we'll hear The Film Show with SW Concert and Jen Chavez. That is all coming up this morning. Right after we hear from Teresa Mitchell, she's hosting Press Watch. It's the news you're not supposed to know. And that is next on KABU.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at In Other Words Bookstore in Portland. A panel of African women from different organizations will be highlighting the issues impacting African women across the globe and to highlight the necessity for African women to be united and organized on a worldwide basis against imperialism. Edutainment and childcare will be provided. Again, that's Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at 5:30 p.m. at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Press Watch, and I'm Theo Vale of Monopoly Media Manipulation, and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Giving you the tools to destroy billionaire rule, I do hope. I want to make a case for this radio station. I would say of all the things that I've done over the past, 30 years, of the protests that I have been to, demonstrations, various efforts, meetings. The most effective thing that I personally have been able to do is to go on the air on KBOO Community Radio. And I've seen that result over the years. It's taken a while. I've put out my ideas and I've seen them reflected back at me. My ideas have changed as a result. And this has been a very good, productive, and synergistic effort for me. And I think it does make a difference. I would say, going back to Occupy, I would say some of those people who marched downtown on that day in 2011, when we all got together and decided to make an effort to make that demonstration, a good number of those people listened to KBOO radio. And so you're listening right now, and I think you probably know the value of being able to get out there with uncensored actual dissent. Considered dissent. It does have an effect. It takes a while. People aren't convinced immediately. We need facts. We need logic. We need persistence, too. And that's the thing that the monopoly media denies us. Whenever a new idea pops up, well, the monopoly media may not cover it at all. The corporate-owned media may not go with, say, a Bernie Sanders or a Jill Stein or someone's new ideas, but when they do, it pops up. If it's deemed dangerous, it's quickly dismissed, and then it's effectively censored. And when I say effectively censored, I mean it is drowned out. Well, here at KBOO, we have one factor that we can present in opposition to that, and that is our persistence. We are still here since 1968, and yes, it does make a difference. When Michael Perini or Noam Chomsky or other speakers come into town, they often comment. They can tell they're in a community radio town. So having made that point, I would like to ask for you to do this thing. This thing would be tell someone that they can find this radio station on the web or on the dial. Tell them where to find it. Ask what their favorite music is. And see if you can find one person. See if you can find three people. But really, if everyone could just find one person, then we would have a greater effect, wouldn't we? The radio station would be better. The outreach would be better. And for myself, my efforts to come out here with an anarcho-socialist attitude and analysis would be more effective. So can you think of one person? Can you maybe think of a couple who don't know about KBOO or might need that extra little bit of encouragement? Turn on that radio. You know, radio is an interesting position right now because I think radio is in the position where it's ready to be rediscovered. You can get satellite radio these days. And satellite radio is very interesting, and it broadcasts exactly the genre, the subgenre that you like. And man, you can just click on that subgenre, and it's nothing but that all day if that's what you want. And it's a fun and fascinating thing. But after a while, I think it's sort of like people realize that the cinema was a good and satisfying thing after years of television driving it down. That was in the 60s and 70s. Cinema started to come back. People have realized that vinyl has its own qualities. The frequency response, for one thing, on vinyl is greater than you're getting on electronic, purely electronic media. And it's very satisfying to have vinyl. Well, it's satisfying to have radio. And here's the deal. When you listen to radio, you're not being tracked by the NSA. When you just turn on an old-fashioned radio receiver, they can't follow that. Technically, they could, but that technology is, you know, that was big in the Second World War. They don't have that stuff sitting around anymore, by and large. So radio, it's real, it's live, it's now. It's 9:06 in Cascadia, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. I want to make the case for revolution. The current regime is unacceptable. The reasons are, first, that a racist regime of mass incarceration here in the United States, right here, right now, right around us, makes life a constant terror for people of color, while the resources of this country are diverted to war profiteers and a grossly corrupt bankster class. Now, that is a threat to all of us, and it should also be a horror, a moral shame. It should make us all cringe to think that we live in this crushing system and we have done nothing about it. More about that soon. Second, case for revolution. Our people are crushed by an economic regime that undermines peace, throws half the nation's workforce into poverty or near poverty. That's you, and you know it's you. One paycheck away from that sidewalk tent. That's you. Or maybe you're already in it. A regime that threatens workers with homelessness. And third, the case for revolution. Our existence is threatened. Our existence, our next breath, is threatened by nuclear saber rattling, which is happening right now around the world by unaccountable leaders. And now we face crashing climate change. Having made those statements, I would like to invite your comments, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I have several news items to back up my statements and to make this case for revolution. Let me start with Project Censored, something you should pull up on the web. You get a chance, projectcensored.org. Monsanto, they write, misled the public into thinking its pesticides are safe and do not cancer when Monsanto knew that they do. Sharon Lerner from The Intercept reported on May 17th, 2016. As of April 2016, John Sanders and Frank Tanner are suing Monsanto because the company did not conduct the necessary tests on the inert ingredients in Roundup. And their inert is in scare quotes. Supposedly inert ingredients in Roundup, a Monsanto product that kills weeds. One such ingredient is polyethoxylated toluamine, or POEA. Although POEA is toxic, the Environmental Protection Agency has not evaluated its dangers because it is not officially an active ingredient. Nice loophole, huh? According to the lawsuit, by labeling POEA as an inert ingredient, Monsanto intentionally mislabeled dangerous chemicals in its products, thereby endangering the public. Farmers and landscapers who use Monsanto's Roundup product would benefit from the suit filed against Monsanto because they would no longer be exposed to the harmful chemicals in the product. And speaking for myself, you've probably heard a lot of the pushback and a lot of the spin from Monsanto saying, oh, it's unscientific to claim that this is dangerous and that genetically modified organisms, which are designed to take this product, are really safe. You have a public, a famous scientist saying everything's really safe. Well, it's lies. There's a reason I call it Monsatan Co. Returning to the article from Project Censored, farmers and landscapers who use Monsanto's Roundup product would benefit. I'm going back on a previous paragraph. Let me try again. This story has gotten some corporate news coverage, but it has not been adequately covered. A review of recent news coverage found just one article that addressed a ban on POEA, published in June 2016 by the Wall Street Journal. In that article, Gabriel Steinhauser reported that the European Commission had proposed a ban on POEA and recommendations on minimizing its use. However, the journal did not cover the suit that Sanders and Tanner filed against Monsanto for failing to conduct studies on the safety of the stuff, and it failed to report that Monsanto mislabeled POEA as an inert ingredient. Lerner's Intercept story includes the perspectives of the plaintiffs Sanders and Tanner and the perspectives of the scientists who tested the chemicals in Roundup and found that POEA was more toxic than glyphosate. The corporate coverage ignores those perspectives, which demonstrate how the independent news story gives a clearer picture of the dangers of Roundup. That's from projectcensored.org. Look it up. From Radio Havana, Dateline Washington, U.S. President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden met with Costa Rica's President Luis Guillermo Solis in Washington to discuss Central America and new steps to improve security in government and protect vulnerable migrants. The White House says that the two U.S. leaders commended Costa Rica for its leadership in setting up a protective transfer arrangement in partnership with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees and International Organization for Migration to provide temporary safe haven for up to 200 refugees at a time from El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. And speaking for myself, yeah, pitiful, isn't it? 200 at a time, so what? But returning to the article, for his part, the Costa Rican president called on Washington to change its discriminatory immigration policy and abolish the so-called Cuban Adjustment Act. And the Cuban Adjustment Act, in case you don't know, is the act that allows for decades refugees from Cuba who float over on rafts or what have you to get very special cash benefits the instant they set foot on the soil of the United States. Also from Radio Havana, Dateline Lima. Until as recently as last year, Peru's National Police Force harbored a death squad that is responsible for the extrajudicial killings of at least 20 people over a four-year period, even at times offering sworn officers bounties to kill criminal suspects, according to an official government investigation of systemic police misconduct. In an executive summary, the Interior Ministry's report found serious indications that both high-ranking and low-level officers of the National Police Force falsified intelligence information to misrepresent at least six cases involving some 20 slayings as the justified result of confrontation with armed suspects. Here again, I will depart from that text and ask you, doesn't that sound familiar? We don't call the police forces in the United States death squads. But why is that? But returning to the article, in fact, they were summary executions carried out by police, according to a summary of the report by Vice Minister of the Internal Order. The report did not disclose the identities of the police suspected of participating in the death squad, but Vargas did reveal that the Vice Minister of Internal Order, Ruben Vargas, did reveal that the operation was headed by a police colonel who was subsequently promoted to general. Local media revealed the scandal over 3 weeks ago after department whistleblowers brought the allegations to light, prompting an investigation. The new report will now be handed over to prosecutors specialized in organized crime to open a case. That's Peru, and that's Radio Havana. One last and third item from Radio Havana, Dateline Bogota. The U.S. prosecutor in the case against former Colombian paramilitary Salvatore Mancuso is seeking a 22-year sentence for the former death squad leader. Mancuso was convicted by Colombian authorities of crimes against humanity, including torture, forced disappearances, homicide, and gender-based violence. The United Self-Defense Forces of Colombia, AUC for its Spanish acronym, which Mancuso helped found, is believed to be responsible for the deaths of some 11,000 people and the forced displacement of tens of thousands. Despite the scale of atrocities committed by his group, Mancuso benefited from a special law approved during the presidency of Álvaro Uribe that saw his sentence reduced to a mere 8 years. The former paramilitary chief was extradited to the United States in 2008 to face trial for his activities in connection to drug trafficking to the United States. Mancuso pled not guilty. His trial was held behind closed doors, with many of the legal documents pertaining to his case also having been sealed. Isn't that interesting? And here's an update. He is now being tried in the court in Barranquilla, Colombia, for 10,000 counts of disappearances, murders, rapes, etc. And you better believe he was a close friend of the United States. So I bring this up because I would like to ask you, what would the numbers be if we collected all the police departments in all the cities of the United States and held them accountable for all of these similarly summary executions? What if we called them death squads when they put so many people to death? What would the numbers be? And you can only get a start by looking, for example, at theguardian.com, guardian.co.uk, and look for their count of police officer deaths in the United States. It's well over 600 already this year. The foreign media, the British media, keep track of U.S. police deaths, U.S. police-related deaths. And our media simply does not, I would say cannot, but actually, you know, they certainly could. It's not something you do in the United States. It's disloyal, I think, would be the word. So the number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And Ken is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. I called initially to respond to what you first talked about, and that was spreading the influence of KBO.
Yes.
And so the other day, I think it was on Positively Revolting, someone called in and asked, why doesn't KBO have invite presidential candidates to come and speak? And so I know this is a fantasy, but here's my fantasy, that we appoint you to be the interrogator, and we send out an invitation to all the presidential candidates. Now, Trump won't come, I don't think. Clinton won't come, but maybe Jill Stein would come.
It's worth a try. We do have to obey those rules, and we try to be careful with them. But yeah, I think that would be an easy enough shot. And what the heck, if we got one of the major political candidates in, that would be a feather in our cap, wouldn't it? I like the idea.
Yeah, I think it would spread KBO, spread its fame widely, you know?
Okay, I will look into that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
That's not my normal procedure, but I actually was going to bring up later in today's broadcast because, as I said earlier, Bernie Sanders was being effectively censored, drowned out, put down constantly in the media. I had articles on Bernie Sanders because this is supposed to be the news you're not supposed to know. So if someone's being absolutely drowned out, then I want to say something about it. I noticed interestingly that the negative frames against Jill Stein, which are coming out of the Democratic Party, say that she is the new Ralph Nader. And what they're forgetting, of course, and I guess intentionally forgetting, is that the candidate, I think his name is Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, is he's double the polling, and his voters, his devotees, are taking away from the polls for the Republican Party. So saying that Jill Stein is a spoiler is kind of ignoring the fact that if you're going to characterize that sort of non-Democratic, non-Republican Party candidate as the spoiler, the other party, the Republican Party, has a larger spoiler. So it's not like she's there alone. And I do have some other information. There's some other slurs against Stein, and so I'll be addressing that. But as I was saying, I'm calling for revolution, for us to move towards revolution. And I don't know what that will look like, but I do know that increasingly people in the United States understand that the system is against them. The Demo-Republican system, the Republicrat system, the deep state, the rule of the super rich is against us. And to go over those reasons again, a racist regime of mass incarceration, let's be honest about it, that's what we live in. And I can give you some details on that, for example. If you look on Breaking Brown, there's an article that points out that someone doing a little research, it was actually a high school kid was doing some research. Article by Yvette on breakingbrown.com. Look that up. She writes, in trying to understand the riots that erupted in Milwaukee earlier this month and why calls for peace are wrong-headed, we should first understand that Milwaukee's black neighborhoods are prison neighborhoods. Middleton High School student Lou Blank revealed to Madison 365 that while researching racial disparity in Wisconsin, and I just have to say, who does the research? It ain't the corporate-owned media. You know, it's the Guardian from Britain. It's a high school student. It's Greg Palast. I mean, for God's sake, what a desert of journalism we live in. Anyway, a Middleton high school student said he'd come across isolated black neighborhoods in the middle of nowhere. It seemed odd to Blank, and for good reason. He would later learn that the pockets of black population that he found were, in fact, jails. Quoting, 31 of the 56 black neighborhoods in Wisconsin are, in fact, jails. And he says, I found out that the places that weren't jails weren't great places to be. Homeless shelters, Section 8 housing, food deserts, etc., end quote. So the black neighborhoods in Wisconsin that aren't jails, Blank found that 21 or 38% are apartment complexes, Section 8 housing, or both. Two are homeless shelters. One is a Job Corps center. The only one left is Milwaukee's general residential black neighborhood, which overall is doing very poorly. Even though Milwaukee is 77% white, the jails are filled up almost entirely with blacks, and the disparity persists throughout the state. 41% of inmates in Wisconsin's jails are black. Despite black people making up only 6% of Wisconsin's general population, this is completely disproportional to the crime rate and drug usage rate, which has been statistically proven to be near equal between blacks and whites. This means that the black community in Wisconsin isn't a community at all. It's in total collapse. And Yvette writes on BreakingBrown.com, if America as a whole was experiencing this level of collapse, there would be riot police on the street in every city, but it goes unnoticed in black communities because black people are considered expendable. Sorry to comment on that. The horror and the shame is what I comment. The shame and the horror. And as I've often said, we seem to be able to hide this from ourselves. When I say we, I mean white people like myself. To look the other way, there's reasons. It's painful. It's difficult to change. But there's not sufficient reason. The shame and the horror is known internationally. As a matter of fact, when North Korea wants to slam the United States, they don't have to make up stuff. They can take their count. Heck, I could give you some great propaganda for North Korea right now. Just a couple blocks from here, the line of tents on the sidewalk. You know, that particular line of tents that I'm thinking of, people keep that area pretty darn clean. Pretty orderly. They just want to sleep through the night. And we've got a climate-induced heat wave coming up today. And somewhere among the hundreds and hundreds, the thousands of people in this area who can't afford air conditioning and maybe just have a tent, somebody who's kind of dehydrated because they worked really hard yesterday, or maybe because they've been so depressed they've been on a drunk for a week, they're laying in their tent, it's going to get hotter and hotter and hotter, and they're going to die. They're going to die from the heat. And it won't be related. It won't be listed as a heat-related death. And whoever that is, a mother, a cousin, a father, a brother, that's going to be real grief. That's going to be a group of people grief. For who, as it turns out, won't know that that person wasn't able to make their rent, that person wasn't able to make their rent, because they heard their foot, whatever, because they saw it takes. This is why I say we have to have a revolution. This is no way to live. This is not acceptable. This is no way to live. This is not this collapse. This is a shame and a horror. Revolution. This is a shame and a horror. Revolution. If we have to have a general strike that paralyzes the commerce of the nation, that would be a good thing. That would be a glorious and affirming thing, a general strike of that nature. Or whatever. Whatever it takes. Let a thousand flowers bloom. Whatever. Whatever you think is a good motion towards revolution. For me, it's coming in here and doing this work on KBOO Portland. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. 8187, the cruise ship, the Crystal Serenity, is now sailing the Northwest Passage. Did you know the Northwest Passage was clear? Well, apparently it is, or close enough for this 13-deck cruise monster to go through it. People have bought tickets for this year's cruise for somewhere between $22,000 each and $120,000 each if you don't want to be in the cheap seats. And a $50,000 insurance policy. That's according to Quartz.com. It's got the frisson of risk. So just, you know, drop some of your spending money, your $120,000, get yourself a nice room. It's going to sail through the, it is sailing around Alaska, through the Victoria Strait, through the Bellot Strait, the Davis Strait, counting on it being relatively ice-free. Got a sort of icebreaker with them. They're traveling from Alaska to New York with their 13-deck cruise ship, hopefully without sinking on an iceberg. Because global warming has reduced the ice extent that alarmingly that you can sail around the north from Alaska to New York. So if you're looking for a Titanic adventure with a Parasite class, they're planning to go again next year. Bon voyage! Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Terry is on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to tell you that I listen to you all the time, and I agree with your basic political positions in almost every single regard, but I'm reacting a little bit right now because you used the word death squad to describe U.S. police forces, or to kind of create an equivalency between the U.S. police forces and death squads, and I think you just, I just want there to be a certain degree of caution with that, because I've lived in a country where there are death squads, and it is different than having completely out of control, racist, free to shoot anybody they damn well please police forces, even though that is really, really horrible, and it's an enormous problem, and it's outrageous, and we have to correct it. It is not actually the same as having organized death squads, paramilitary death squads, that are targeting groups of people, developing hit lists, and going out and murdering them.
Have you ever looked down a police gun yourself?
I have not.
I have.
But listen, I think it's important to keep our terminology straight, because if you've lived around, if you've lived under death squads, you understand that there's a difference, and I think it would be worthwhile to look. I'm not a UN human rights expert. I don't know what the terminology is for different kinds of police and military abuses, but I do think that there is a difference.
Okay, well, that's a valuable perspective, I'm sure. Where have you lived with death squads? Did you live in El Salvador?
No, I lived in Guatemala.
That'll do it.
It was real, and it's not the same thing that we're dealing with here, and I recognize what we're dealing with here, and I am horrified by it, and we need to stop it. We don't want it to become death squads. But I don't think that it's correct to conflate what we're dealing with here with the term death squad. And I just wanted to point that out.
Okay, I really appreciate you calling and speaking your perspective with confidence. And I completely disagree. And so now I'm going to tell you why. As I said, I have looked down the barrel of a gun, and I've had some time to think about it. And it's like this. In Guatemala, a city, if you've got a job, you're a clerk, you're doing okay, you dress a certain way, you take the bus to work, or maybe you got your own car, you are never going to face a death squad. And when a death squad happens, it's always going to be framed like this. Well, the terrorists are being confronted in the most effective way, and the only way left to us. This is desperation. This has to be done. And maybe someone would go along with that. A lot of people do. Millions do. That's what happens. From my perspective, that's exactly what happens in the United States. You know, I'm not black, but I am transgender, and I have been faced by a local officer who offered to taser me. I found out that a couple of months previous to that, he had tasered someone to death. And I have looked down the barrel of a gun merely for being a loud and irritating person to the police. No threat at all. No, just saying something they didn't like, on the edge of death. And I guarantee that if a policeman were to come outside this studio and blow me away the instant I walk out, he'd get away with it. I would have been a threatening person. It's a death squad. Anyone who is not employed, white, well-off, lawyered up, is subject to death. And the reason is because we have all these good apples, we have all these good cops, and not one of them will turn against the bad apples, and not one of them will come out and help betray the murderers, expose the murderers. It wouldn't be betrayal for the people generally. So it's effectively a death squad. I mean, what's the difference? I can get killed. All I have to do is go out there and flip off a cop. They hate trannies, I guarantee you.
Well, I would suggest trying to get a better definition of death squad, because I think there's a difference between a murderous police force, which is racist and anti-LGBTQ and all of the other things that it is, and actually what qualifies in international law terms as death squad.
And I would say that there is not, that these death squads have their legitimacy in the countries in which they operate. I think you've made your point pretty well, and I really appreciate you calling in with that. Thanks very much. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. We have another Terry calling in.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Terry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, you sound kind of faint, and I do too. I want to push back against the last Terry that called. I understand how you feel. I'm an African American. To some of us, whether it's your reason or just being born, it is a death squad. The police are death squads to us.
If black people don't matter, then it's not a death squad. If black people are humans and they do matter, then it's a freaking death squad. What else is it?
I wanted her to understand. I know what she was saying, but I want her to hear that certain groups of people are the entire population that she's talking about in Guatemala. Certain groups of black people, transgender, we are the thing that she's talking about. We wake up, we can't take it off. There's no taking it off. You don't get any rest.
I hear what you're saying there. Are you still there?
Yes. And I wanted to speak about the revolution.
All right.
I've been dying to say this for a long time. I wish people would get together and put up some resistance against things that go against us, like sports, not the players, but the things that they sell. What do they call it? Concessions? We the people need leverage. Teresa, can I call you back another time? I got a lot of clicking on my phone.
Yeah,
right,
I hear the clicking.
I can't even tell if you hear me.
Okay, yeah, try it again. And,
okay, but I'm going to keep listening. Are you here every Thursday at this hour?
Every Thursday at this hour.
Okay, you keep moving on, brother. Sis, you keep moving.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, then. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I am calling for revolution, and I'm calling for revolution because we cannot exist this way. It is shameful to exist this way. It is surely eventually deadly to us. We live in a racist regime of mass incarceration, making life a constant terror for people of color, while the resources of people are diverted to war profiteers and a grossly corrupt bankster class. Do we doubt this? Our people are crushed by an economic regime that undermines peace and throws half the nation's workforce into poverty or near poverty, and that near poverty is a crushing thing, isn't it? Because you know, as soon as you lose one of your three jobs, you are going to be threatened with homelessness. And third, our existence is threatened immediately by nuclear saber rattling that is happening around the world right now. Yes, Turkey invaded Syria. Did you hear about that? Is that in the news? Turkey invades Syria. Oh, I think that might be an item, don't you? If you were compiling some news, Turkey invades Syria, nuclear saber rattling, crashing climate change, Louisiana flooded, California burning. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Sunny's on the air.
Hi, good morning. Let's not forget that the U.S. is now establishing bases in Libya, even though Libya is being fought over by three different factions to rule the government. So, like, we've got Libya, Syria, working with Turkey, Afghanistan. Oh, and we're just so busy with war and death.
And who blew up Libya? Who destabilized Libya?
Oh, yeah, he did. Our nice guy in the White House.
Yeah, with? The Secretary of State?
With Hillary.
Yeah.
Yeah, change people. Oh, big change. You know, the other thing is homelessness is a way to just kill people, because that's what it really means. You don't have a place to live anymore. You get to die. You're going to die soon. It's so sad. It's very sad. And I just wanted to say quickly, so I won't forget this, I'm really concerned about making sure that when your public affairs lady, Kathleen Stevenson, moves into her rightly deserved retirement,
hooray,
that the public affairs sector, which has been so strong and outstanding, will continue to be so with KBOO.
Ah, well, you should get involved with KBOO's hiring committees.
I'm not up to it.
Okay.
But the thing about it is that who could be quite up to it? It's going to be something. It's going to be something. So my idea was perhaps KBOO might consider breaking it into three positions or two positions or four positions so that people aren't overwhelmed with the idea of how can we fill her shoes and maybe not apply at all, or maybe that way it helps everybody get going and then they can keep one another going. And just an idea of maybe breaking it into two, three positions or something, just in case it turns out that it's hard to meet her standard, what she has set, because she's really been top. That's just an idea. Then the other thing is, as far as revolution, I think the level of surveillance is so heavy that any effort at, you know, violent overthrow will be quickly snuffed out. So my idea is economic, while we still have some resources, we get the economics going, like, for instance, start developing some products, start selling candy, taking it all around to all the pot stores, putting it out there as a product. I put that idea before forward. Get our own money going, buy our own land, get the people fed, start showing what beauty and happiness is, and I think that there will be greater people coming that direction.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that. When I call for revolution, I call for general strike. Hey, I'm not calling for breaking beer bottle one.
Oh, yes.
A general strike can
definitely
be perfectly peaceful.
Strikes, yeah, and stop buying. Just, you know, shut down consumption for a whole week. Just say, we're not buying anything. Just not going to buy it.
But all the actions.
The other thing is, what's going on with these police planes over Baltimore? What are they doing? They're up in the air 24 hours a day. What are they looking at?
Because I think it'll eventually be found out that we had one over Portland for quite a while.
Yeah, well, now when people are talking about, I'm not in this. This isn't happening to me. It is already happening to them. So what's going on when they're flying around? That's all I was going to ask, if you could tell us. What are they doing?
Well, I'd like to, you know, I can answer that partly. Part of what they're doing, I mean, there's a great deal of surveillance. You probably heard of the Smurf programs and similar programs that can turn on your cell phone, listen to you, photograph you, video you, whether you think your phone's working or not. So what can they gain by putting up a plane? They can track movement a little bit better, but also there's an audio device on the plane and video cameras as well that can listen to you very intently. And there's a circuit which annuls the sound of the prop. So you'd think it was too noisy up there with that thing buzzing, but actually that's entirely nulled out by the program, and they can listen with great sensitivity to what is being said. So if you're away from your cell phone, they can pick that up as well. And also, it just creeps people out, and I think that there are elements of the secret police that like that.
They want to hear everything. They want to see everything. They want to get down your underpants. And, you know, the people that practice targeting who are furthering factionalism, because I've been targeted just about by every population in this country right now because I have a big mouth. I just want them to know that they're furthering all of this. You know, we were worried about Big Brother, but we should really worry about all the little brothers and little sisters that are out there taping, filming, cameraing their fellow citizens and acting like they're so politically correct and liberal-minded and evolved when they do not know people's background stories. I made the bad mistake, I must admit, in the past that I did vote OCA out of rage because I'd been betrayed by a bisexual partner and had to go through 4 years of HIV testing. In addition, he admitted that he was sexually attracted to children. So I was really mad. And that was a bad mistake, and I paid for it. But what was really cute is that faction connected with other factions all the way down to the KKK. Now imagine that there are pro-gay elements that are in alliance with pro-KKK elements. So what I'm saying is when there's a targeter and they want to share something like, look at this, look what I put in your email about somebody we both know, you're looking at a traitor to freedom.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your opinion. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Ah, yes, the OCA, the Oregon Citizens Alliance. And their conflation, like the Russians do right now, they pulled up pseudoscience, as the Russians are right now. And they conflated gender variance with predation. And they'd like to keep it that way because that keeps the manly men in charge, doesn't it? And Sam's on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
So apropos of what we're talking about, I want to know why they have articles about the Bundy boys every day on every outlet, and there's 5,000 people in North Dakota trying to block a pipeline, and we don't hear a peep about it.
Well, I think that's a good question. You know, my immediate response would be that the Bundy thing was, it was pitiful. It was relatively powerless. It's a narrative that is acceptable within corporate media. It was a stunt that couldn't possibly have worked, and therefore it represents no threat to deep state, to the owning class. Whereas blocking a pipeline is saying, hey, we choose our lives, we choose the ecosystem, we choose popular sovereignty and democracy over corporate profits. Now, that's not something you're really allowed to talk about. The idea that corporate profits are supreme is supposed to be absolutely prevailing, and yet we're not supposed to count. We're not supposed to talk about it.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
So there's over 5,000 people camped out there now. There's 80 tribes represented, and they're going to cream them. They're going to do them just like they did Occupy. They've authorized this expenditure of the money now. They're going to bring in SWAT teams or the Department of Homeland Security.
Let's not forget the infiltrators and the provocateurs that were crammed into Occupy.
Yeah, and they're going to roll them up. You know, it's just like they did Occupy. They're going to roll them up, and they'll make it all about those dirty Indians, and you know they didn't understand capitalism and they were backward, and they shut off the water now. They're not allowing any water to be brought in. They're shut off the pumping the porta potties. So they'll say, oh, those people were crapping in the woods, and we just had to clean it up for public safety reasons. The Indians lose again. That's all.
Thank you for that perspective. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Speaking of alternate perspectives, it's very difficult to find neutral or positive articles about Jill Stein. There's a positive article in The Inquisitor, and it starts off this way. Let's clear this up right now. Jill Stein is not in any way, shape, or form an anti-science conspiracy theorist. She is the opposite, which is why this smear was designed this way. In the Karl Rove Handbook of Negating Your Political Opponents, number 2 is to attack them on their strengths, thereby forcing your opponent to back away from the very qualities that makes them an attractive candidate. And obviously, science is Stein's strength. Dr. Jill Stein is a brilliant doctor who graduated magna cum laude from Harvard University, has written several books reviewing and aggregating information from scientific studies on medicine, health, and the environment, and is absolutely 100% qualified to have authoritative opinions on these matters. If you think otherwise, it's because you're failing to think critically. Dr. Jill Stein's strength is her science background and her solid science platform. She has consistently advocated for more scientifically founded policy, i.e. founded on unbiased scientific research. Stein calls for a better environment for that to happen. At the moment, the governing bodies which regulate the scientific research which determines health policy are run by people who take large donations from lobbyists and corporations with a vested interest in the outcomes of that research. The new FDA commissioner, Robert Kalf, for example, has received money from 23 drug companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Lilly, Merck, Schering. And that article goes on. You can find it at The Inquisitor. Just a little bit different from what, I would say 6-1 anti-Stein articles If you can find anything about Jill Stein at all. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Forrest is on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on this death squad thing. It was about 4 or 5 months ago on either Flashpoints or Alternative Radio, David Barsamian, where they had someone who said that one of the biggest exports of the Israelis is their security training. They train security forces all around the world because everybody admires how they keep the Palestinians in their place, and that's their advertisement for their biggest export. Then about a month ago, in Counterpunch, there was an article that said the United States police forces are being trained by the Israelis.
Yes. Yes, that's happened all over. It's happened here in Portland. We've had Chicago police, if I remember correctly, coming down here. And who are the worst? Well, it would be the Israelis and the Chicago police.
So that's my comment. Just, you know, we're all becoming the Palestinians of the United States, you know.
John Trudell once said at a lecture I attended, "You're the Indians now."
Yeah, we're the Indians, the Palestinians, etc. Yeah. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Jim's on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I think two things. Number one, that lady who was asking you to make a distinction between death squads and police, you know, to her I would say, you know, like that one lady said, to certain populations, you know, they are death squads. But I think more importantly is realizing that, you know, there's people who have been so badly affected by police that, you know, it's like there's no real way for them to be able to have a good relationship with them. But that shouldn't change if there's people out there who want to create, you know, they want to create good, you know, they want to create sound communication between communities and police. They're going to have to realize that they're going to have to continue to fight that. And I think that that's really important to note because, I mean, obviously maybe she has somebody that she knows who's a police officer and that's all fine and well, but you can't just dismiss other people's opinions simply because it doesn't fit your view of the world. And number two, I think it's, you know, Jill Stein, I get tired of hearing about how she's an anti-vaxxer and how she's anti-science when, like you said, you know, that article, you know, she's well-educated, her opinions are well-founded, and I think it's just, you know, they're afraid. You know, they won't report on Gary Johnson because he's essentially what they like. It's more extreme than what they would do themselves, maybe, but he's what they like. Jill Stein is actually advocating for real change that requires companies to actually invest money in something that works. And I'm it's really frustrating. So, what was it? And about the, you know, it's like we got an and one more thing, we got an update every day about those yihadists, as people call them, the Bundys. We got an update every day from every news outlet on how it was going, but you haven't heard one peep about anything from the news outlets about the protest with the Standing Stone Sioux. So, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up again. The Standing Stone Sioux, yes, confronting that pipeline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot to say about that, isn't there? I don't know where to start sometimes. Number to call, 503-231-8187. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, Jill Stein writes in an op-ed on The Hill. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is a hero like Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, and other whistleblowers facing government persecution. Assange has sacrificed his personal comfort and safety to bring us the truth. George Orwell said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. Thanks to WikiLeaks, we know that powerful institutions have been abusing their power and lying to the public. For example, redacted State Department communications published by WikiLeaks revealed that Secretary Clinton identified Saudi Arabia as a leading funding source for terrorist groups around the time she approved a whopping $29 billion arms deal with the Saudi dictatorship. WikiLeaks courageously published the infamous collateral murder video, showing an American helicopter gunning down Iraqi civilians. Viewed over 15 million times on YouTube alone, it revealed just one of the many shocking war crimes whitewashed as collateral damage by the U.S. government. And Jill Stein writes, WikiLeaks stunning revelations of how top Democratic National Committee officials conspired to sabotage Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign in collusion with the media shattered the illusion of a fair electoral process and confirmed what millions of Americans already knew in their gut. We live under a rigged political system. And she writes, what WikiLeaks actually does to political parties, the military, and other powerful entities is to pull back the curtain of censorship, spin, and deception to show the public what's really going on. Unlike pundits in the mainstream media, WikiLeaks doesn't tell us what to think. They invite us to read the emails, watch the footage, and decide for ourselves. There's more to that article. It's in The Hill, and it is Jill Stein's writing, Jill Stein op-ed in praise of WikiLeaks. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Dave is on the air.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Didn't Julian Assange escape an assassination attempt a couple of days ago?
Did he?
Yeah. Didn't MI5 try to scale the wall and kill him?
Well, that's news to me. So.
I heard that on Mike Malloy last night.
Huh. Very interesting.
But what I was going to say was, and I've said this before, I have cousins in law enforcement. I'm African American. I believe, and I really believe this, and I want to know what you think. I think that we ought to do that Obama or Clinton or Trump ought to fire each and every law enforcement officer at once. And then if they want to be rehired, they have to go through an extensive psychological background. Extensive. What do you think?
Doesn't hurt. Does it?
I mean, Reagan fired all the air traffic controllers because they wanted more sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, thank you for taking my call. You're doing a great job, Teresa. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I've been calling for revolution. And when I call for revolution, I mean however we can do it. And of course, peacefully if possible. But there's nothing peaceful about conformity. There's nothing peaceful about allowing climate change to destroy the ecosphere. There's nothing peaceful about nuclear war being threatened by the saber rattling that is going on under our noses, the worst saber rattling since Reagan. And most people don't know just how bad that was. But I know because I was working in a newsroom. I had what used to be the stock ticker-like UPI readout. And it rattled away. And every now and then a story would come up which was not echoed by the corporate-owned media. Back then, in 1981, and the story would be that the U.S. fleet was in the Black Sea, absolutely terrorizing and following the Soviet fleet and threatening nuclear war to the point that at one point there were Soviet nuclear-armed subs patrolling the waters of the Gulf of Mexico, whiskey-class subs, 4 minutes away at that point where I was at in Lubbock, Texas, from nuclear detonation. And I realized as this went on and on over months that the evacuation plans were useless. And though it was illegal to do so, and though it threatened my license at the time as a broadcaster, I broke them open to see what they said. And there were audio files as well. A guy with some great pipes recorded them. And they told about how to get away from the city center of Lubbock. It would have required at least a couple of hours advance notice for nuclear war. A complete fantasy. If the Soviet subs had launched and they were on the verge of doing so, we simply would have been obliterated, annihilated. A quick death for those of us close to the detonation, at least. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Joe's on the air.
Hi, Therese. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, regarding the TPP, I guess it was kind of like an informational rally that they had down in the park blocks in downtown Portland last Saturday.
Yes.
I heard on Paul Rowland's show earlier this week on KBOO that hardly anybody showed up, and all the people that were in their little booths were wondering why there was nobody there. Well, the reason is because the only way you could get a ticket was to go online. If you go online, you're going to let the establishment know that you're anti-TPP. Thus, you will be, after that point, you will be on their target list of people that they don't like. So anybody with a brain IQ above 70 knows that you don't want to do that. If they would have just made it come one, come all, then people would have showed up regardless of the 100-degree outdoor temperature we had at the time.
Intimidation works whether it's acted on or not. I remember back in the 80s asking people to sign a petition to impeach Ronald Reagan for his various crimes, and people would come up to me and whisper and say that they'd like to sign, but they were afraid.
Well, here's the thing, it is, that was different back then because you didn't have the internet. Now you have the internet and you sign up to get a ticket, and everybody knows who you are and what your motives are. I mean, hell, if the head of the CIA and the head of the Department of Defense last November had their email accounts hacked into by who we don't know, but probably the Chinese or the North Koreans, but if they're email accounts can get hacked into, and I saw the news report on the national news and also on C-SPAN, so this isn't just something I'm pulling out of my ear, but the if they can be hacked into your piddly little computer that you have at home or your internet device, your tablet or whatever, it's easily hacked into. They're, whoever these people are that are, that were organizing this TPP protest with the concert and everything, I guess they had towards the end of it, there now you're on the list, so to speak, of the undesirables. And
but how do you deal with that sort of thing? I mean, really, under these circumstances, really, I would argue that your recourse should be to be more bold. I've actually seen, I remember seeing a policeman trying to intimidate a demonstration against the U.S.'s proxy wars in Central America. I was in Austin at the time many years ago. He pulled out a big video rig, and at the time that was intimidating. This is before everyone having a cell phone camera, a video recorder. So he pulls it up and he aims at us, and I yelled at him at the top of my lungs, "Secret police!" And I just kept repeating that, and he put the camera away.
By the way, speaking of secret police, I have good from a good source that says that most police cars, this guy was in a park in Portland, I believe, somewhere. I ran into him in a parking lot at a grocery store here about a year ago. But he was out with his girlfriend and another couple, and they were having a little picnic in the park, and there was other people around there, too. There was dozens of other people. He went down to use the bathroom. When he came out of the bathroom, there was a patrol car nearby, and he could hear his buddy's voice coming out over his internal speaker inside the patrol car. And he questioned the police officer, "Hey, why is my buddy's voice coming out of your inside of your patrol car?" The police officer said, "Oh, you're just hearing some people talking from the dispatch or something like that." Tried to smooth it over.
But he obviously had a bug.
He says, "My buddy's voice is very distinctive. I know that's my buddy because he's sitting right up there on the hill talking to his girlfriend and my girlfriend."
Okay, so that was an act of intimidation. That was an effort to frighten you, because otherwise they would have kept that quite secret. They know not to keep the speaker on. And how do you deal with that sort of bullying? How do you deal with that sort of intimidation? You stand strong together. We together can face this.
I understand that, but
and
I'm not.
Thank you very much for your call. And I do have one last news item. So thank you very much for that. And I was mentioning earlier that big news item of the day is that Turkey has invaded Syria. And so this is from Jason Deitz from antiwar.com. Russian officials issued a statement of concern on news of Turkey's military invasion of northern Syria, appearing to be particularly worried about the escalation of Turkey's fighting against Kurdish forces inside northern Syria. Western officials, however, a lot more upbeat. German foreign ministry officials endorsed the invasion as in keeping with the goals and aims of the anti-ISIS coalition. They also indicated they were fine with Turkey attacking the Kurds and wouldn't complain about it. Quote, "Turkey rightly or wrongly believes there are links between the PKK, which we see as a terror organization on the Turkish side, and elements among the Kurds of the Syrian side," end quote. That's from German spokesman Martin Schaefer. He added that Turkey has a legitimate right to take action against them. U.S. officials haven't spoken directly on the matter, but did carry out 8 airstrikes against targets inside Jarablus, that's the border town in Syria that's been invaded, in support of the Turkish invasion of that town, meaning they are directly participating in the new offensive, even though it is quickly bringing the Turkish forces into direct conflict with U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters. And as I've mentioned before, the Syrian government is supported by Russia. This escalation is increasing. Big news for today: Turkey invades Syria. Thank you for listening to Press Watch. And we're going out to you via 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia. Stay tuned for more of the incomparable Radio Zine right here, and tune in to KBOO.FM. We use that manner to go out to all the ships at sea.
And good morning. It is KBOO, KBOO Portland. 1 minute before 10 o'clock, we're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints. Today, a closer look at the Kurds in Syria with New York Times Magazine author Robert F. Wirth. Coverage of Yemen and the role of the U.S. in a deadly air campaign led by the Saudis. And the Election Crimes Bulletin with Dennis Bernstein and Greg Pallast. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones interviews Zora O'Neill, author of the new book All Strangers Are Kin, Adventures in Arabic and the Arab World. And at 11:30, you can hear the film show with SW Concert and Jen Chavez. Coming up next, though, it's Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Stay with us. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast on Saturday, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Holiday Park in Portland. Swing dance lessons start an evening of live music with breaks included for short informational speeches about the life and history of jazz in the early 20th century. Again, that's Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast on Saturday, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Holiday Park between Northeast 11th Avenue and Holiday Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.